You're listening to DVD Talk Radio.
Greetings, pod people. This is Cinish Lockerama columnist Noel Gross, and today is a great day because here in my hand I have The Fly and The Fly 2, both in double disc special editions. And for 5 years we've been clamoring, haven't we, for The Fly to come out in such a form, in such a true ode, because we've dealt previously with double feature discs. You know, that has the same word in it, double, but double feature and double disc, we know as DVD fans, those are very different things. And the double feature was fun. We had The Fly and Return of the Fly, the great Vincent Price classics. And we also, at the same time, were given The Fly and The Fly 2 as a double feature. And while you know, the majority out there was not so happy to see The Fly 2 stuck on the same disc with their great David Cronenberg remake. Schlock fans, we weren't too upset about that. We love The Fly 2, but we'll get into that a little bit more later. But now they are no longer genetically linked, as it were. Now we have true special editions of both films, which I think should be a little bit vindicating for those of us who are fans of The Fly 2. But for the David Cronenberg cronies out there, they finally got something, which I am certainly a David Cronenberg crony. I enjoy the Fly, especially, and a lot of other David Cronenberg pictures. But The Fly is very special to a lot of us. And I think that's probably why there was a sort of a negative reaction to the double feature. It's such a great film. It just shouldn't, you know, it should have its own presentation. And it also deserves a lot of extras and goodies and all that sort of thing. And it didn't have that. And it turns out part of the reason for that was just Fox's unwillingness to revisit the transfer. And I did a phone interview with Cronenberg for a picture called Rabid, and I asked him about it. He recently had a pretty good run of special edition DVDs, and Rabid being one of them. And I asked him about The Fly, and he said, well, it just came down to I wanted to improve the transfer. He wasn't happy with how The Fly looked, and he wanted to, be able to sit in for the color correction and all that sort of thing. And if they weren't going to allow him to do that, well, he didn't really feel like he wanted to contribute to a special edition of a film that wouldn't be seen the way he wanted. And he told me, and he told all Cinschloggers out there through the interview, that if we see a special edition out with his commentary, that means he's happy with it. And that's what I'm holding in my hot little hand here. Special edition of The Fly. And it does. It looks great. And his commentary is really good. It's probably one of the more accessible tracks. Not quite as a Film Academy, geared. It's not to say that it's knuckle-dragging in any way. But I think Cronenberg is, to his own confession, he's watching the film after a long time. And he was, frankly, a little bit startled by it. He was watching it as an older man than when he made it back in the 80s. And I think he was watching it with the sort of eyes that we watch it as fans. We were horrified, and we were very much wrapped up in Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum's love story and the gruesome, horrible end of Seth Brundle. And I think he experienced that in a very different way, and I think it transferred over into his commentary. Now, that's not to say that we don't get into sort of Brainiac territory that Cronenberg is known for. You know, he talks about how he feels like he fused with his actors in the same way that the Brundle and the Fly fused together. He feels like during the course of making a picture that a connection that's formed between cast and director that can be a sort of symbiotic relationship and one that feeds both parties. He also directly counters the notion that this is an AIDS picture. A lot of people who interpreting the film, like any sort of piece, literary work or something like that, because of when it was made, felt like that you could draw the parallel that this is a metaphor or a meditation on the AIDS epidemic. And he discounts that, agrees though that it, you know, it can be seen that way, but that was certainly not in his mind. He's a lot more practical about it. He feels it's more of a meditation on aging, and this is just an example of, Brundle is an example of a rapid aging process, and the body breaking down and becoming something that you're unfamiliar with. Either way, you know, it's fun to sort of think about that in between the gross outs and ears falling off and fly puke. It's good that we get this time with Cronenberg because we don't really have any sort of input from him on Disc 2, which has all the other goodies on it. There's this really weighty documentary on the second disc that clocks in at 2 hours and 16 minutes, and it feels every bit of that length. I'm a huge Fly fan, and it was a bit of a chore to get through. All of it is interesting. It's just a lot of interesting things. In theory, it's broken down into three parts. I guess, though, when I hit play, it ran in one big thing, and it's not something that you can just look away from. You know, if you're a Fly fan, you're going to want to stick with this thing. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily the best making of documentary you're ever going to see. You're just seeing a lot of content, but it does interview the key folks, except for Cronenberg, which is, you know, it wasn't until toward the end that I was realizing, hey, wait a minute, we're not getting any contemporary interview footage with Cronenberg. And I guess that's because he felt like he'd said pretty much everything he wanted to say with the commentary. But we do hear from Jeff Goldblum. We do hear from Gina Davis. Lots of input from folks that worked with Cronenberg at the time of the filming, producers, are in the larva stage, which is the first stage of the documentary. There's really interesting piece about the original director and tragedy that befell him. The original writer is interviewed, not of the original short story, but of the original script. It's very interesting to get that sort of perspective. If you're feeling especially adventurous, you can watch the documentary, which incidentally is titled Fear of the Flesh, which that's a very Cronenberg title, isn't it? Fear of the Flesh. If you're feeling especially adventurous, you can watch an enhanced version of the documentary, and that means that while you're, you know, bebopping along through the piece, a little fly will come up at the bottom of the screen, and if you hit your remote right then, well, you'll branch off into 15 or so other little clips, no longer than 3 minutes a piece. I think it balloons the running time up to, let me check my notes. Yeah, it balloons the running time up to almost 3 hours. It's 2 hours and 40 something minutes. The branches themselves are, you know, vaguely sort of expository and enlightening, but, you know, you get a little bit more with Jeff and you get a little bit more with Gina. So that's interesting to see. In contrast, there's a little 12-minute reel called the Brundle Museum of Natural History, and as fans, we all know what that means. That's the medicine cabinet. That's where all the little bits and pieces that fall off Brundle end up, and we all sort of wonder, is that his wang doodle in there? You know, you've wondered that. Don't even pretend like you didn't. What this actually is, it's not a part-by-part guide to what's in the medicine cabinet. What it is a visit to Bob Burns' house. And if you're any sort of creature feature fan, you know who Bob Burns is. He is this collector of all sorts of sci-fi monster goodies I recommend a book called It Came from Bob's Basement. It's a great little glossary or visual dictionary of all the little things that are in that museum. Chris Wallace goes and visits his fly memorabilia that reside at the museum, which is really Bob's house. And through visiting those different pieces, we get to get different windows into the production, and specifically the creature effects design. But I know all of you are wondering, is the cat monkey scene in here? Is the fusing of the baboon and the kitty cat, is that infamous scene, is it resurrected? Is it in this cut of the film? No, it's not in this cut of the film, but it exists on disc 2. It's no longer this figment of our imagination. It really exists. And you can sort of see why it was cut out of the picture, but God, is it a lot of fun. It's you get to see a stage of the Brundle transformation that is, completely cut out of the film. You get to see, Jeff in another just horrifying getup. And you get to see the baboon and the sweet little kitty cat go in one telepod. Baboon goes in one telepod, cat goes in another telepod, and the third telepod, the prototype telepod. Well, that's one that's used at the end of the picture. Well, Brundle transports those two. They're fused and become the cat monkey or the monkey cat or whatever. And that is a pretty disgusting scene. And they've done really all they can to. They've put some Howard Shore's music over it and added some sound effects and things. And it really seems like you could just plop it right down the film. But it's just an approximation. It's not how it was originally in the cut of the picture. At one point it was in there, but through Fear of the Flesh, you'll see why it was cut out. And I think most Cineschloggers will agree that, no, it probably doesn't belong in there. But it's on this DVD, and we get to watch it whenever we want. We can watch the Brundle fly chew off his own arm and all that sort of stuff. It's a feature made for the Cineschlogger. And there's some other deleted scenes that aren't quite as much made for the Cineschlogger, like the baby butterfly. I'll let you discover that for yourselves. I don't know how that ever, anybody ever thought that was a good idea, but there was a certain producer who thought it was a good idea, but thankfully he saw the errors of his ways. So, and then there's all the other extra stuff that you expect to see. You've got about 150 stills of all sorts of derivations. You've got the original short story. You've got the first draft of the picture. You've got the Cronenberg script. You've got a couple of different interactive articles. There's really not a whole lot of room for complaints about this special edition. It's pretty much all we could ever ask for. If a complaint is that there's too much, well, I guess that's a really ticklish complaint. And I may knock off half a star because you can imagine a special edition that would deserve 5 stars because every extra was on there and every extra was of high quality. And I think I'm going to go 4.5 stars on extras just because, that documentary, is good, but it's a little cumbersome. And you think of pictures like 12 Monkeys that has that great documentary, The Hamster Factor. Making of documentaries are an art unto themselves, and while this one is certainly expansive, I think it could have been more entertaining and better edited and brought into a more clear form that is also easily digested without the need of fly goo. But other than that, it's a true DVD Talk Collector Series. Highest marks you can possibly get. We don't have to worry about the Fly Special Edition anymore. It's here and it's wonderful, and fans will literally spend hours with this 2-disc set. And that's more than can be said of a lot of special editions that we just kind of stick on our shelves and are proud to own. But this is one that you're going to actually spend time with, and I think that's probably the greatest credit that you can give. But let's face it, you're probably going to buy the fly no matter what I say. But if I can't influence you at all, I want to influence you to buy the Fly 2 Special Edition. And here's why. I look at the Fly the same way I look at Predator. Predator is a great film. The Fly is a great film. They both have sequels of somewhat dubious merit. But I think as Cineschlockers, we look at those sequels in a different way. They give us more of what we loved about the first film. In Predator, we love that space alien ass-kicker with the Rastafarian hairdo. Well, in Fly 2, we love fly puke and metamorphoses that are murderous in nature and just plain icky. Get lots of that in the Fly 2. And what is really interesting is the take that the film goes in. It's on the surface, you could say it's sort of, well, it's more tinkering with the pods and just, you know, more of the same. A little bit of love story, a little bit of thing. And director Chris Wallace addresses that. He says that the producers and the studio had very definite ideas about what made The Fly a hit, and they wanted those ingredients in there. But I think that they're very different films. And let me just use this example. David Cronenberg and his film has a birthing scene. Yes, Gina Davis lays her little head down and has a dream about giving birth to a maggot. Well, in the sequel, she actually gives birth to that maggot. And I think that is a definite example of, you know, the difference in the film. The Fly 2 goes places that even David Cronenberg wouldn't go to. It actually features, from frame one, the birth of a maggot from a lovely, beautiful woman. Actually a stand-in for Gina Davis. If you look closely, you can see they even painted on the mole. Also in The Fly 2, I don't think I'm giving too much away. They kill a dog. Not only do they kill a dog, they mutate a dog. And it's a sweet, wonderful dog. It's a golden retriever. It's sort of the archetype, perfect family dog. And little Martin is able to bond with the dog. And then, even as a child, sees that dog horribly mutated through the pod transfer that is obviously very screwed up. But if the Gul'dang pods worked, we wouldn't have much of a movie now, would we? I think it's this mutation of the good puppy dog that actually blackens the heart of this picture quite a bit, and I think that's what makes it a lot more enjoyable in the way that it ends. And that's because it transmorphs into a revenge picture. Sure, I'll admit it, it's easy to get distracted when you got a lovely gal like Daphne Zuniga climbing up on Eric Stoltz, who's, according to the film, he's like 5 years old. But she's right there to usher him into manhood like any sort of IT professional's dream gal. Kind of makes you wonder why more fellows weren't volunteering for the graveyard shift there at Bartok, doesn't it? I know. I hear the Cineschlockers out there. More fly vomit. Talk about the fly vomit. I hear you. No more kissy face. Fly vomit. Well, the final reel of this picture has all the fly goo that you would ever want. Especially when he upchucks in the face of that security guard and the dude's face melts away and his jaw flaps and he's screaming and nothing's coming out because his tongue has been zapped and all kinds of disgusting things are happening. Well, keep an eye on that security guard. They cut away, see some fly legs, and then you see the security guard's buddies come running up behind him. He's still breathing. He's laying on the ground, gasping for breath. He's not dead. It's not like one of those other Hollywood movies where you get, you know, upchucked on by the monster and you die immediately. In this movie, you're still in pain and horrible, disgusting pain, and your chest is writhing and all that kind of stuff. That's why I love The Fly. I admit it. I'm a gross-out guru here, folks. But the best gag of the whole flick, you know, oddly enough, isn't a fly gag. It's an elevator. We're creeped out by elevators, aren't we? every sort of, you know, horror movie that you have with an elevator, you know there's trouble. Remember Resident Evil, the video game movie? Death by elevator there. Or how about the elevator unpleasantness caused by Damien in the Omen sequel? Or more recently, Final Destination 2, remember that? Here, the elevator wasn't even supposed to be there. It was just supposed to be used for the building of the set, and the director saw it and says, that elevator is cool. Not only is it cool, we're going to kill somebody with it, and that's my kind of director. And boy, golly, does that head explode. That's a head crush like no other head crush. And the way Daphne reacts to it just makes it even more disgusting, doesn't it? Oh, I gotta settle down here. I'm getting a little too worked up. Let's talk about extras. I've given my reasons why I think that The Fly is a 5-star picture, and why I think, you know, for its merits, The Fly 2 is a 5-star picture in its own little sick world. Well, we've got a commentary by Chris Wallace, and okay, it's not that great of a commentary, but it does have Bob Burns, his buddy Bob Burns, the film historian that I talked about earlier, joins him for the track. And, you know, I wish they would talk about the movie more. They just kind of chit-chat about going to Japan and all that kind of stuff. But about an hour and 10 minutes into it, why don't you just punch in then? And I think you'll enjoy it, because Bob Burns starts to talk about it, you know, his museum and all that sort of thing. And I think you're going to enjoy that part. You know, if you're coming to the commentary wanting to learn a lot about the picture, you're going to come up short. But if you, you know, would like to expand your knowledge of a little bit of prop history and that sort of thing, stick with Bob Burns. An hour and 10 minutes into the commentary, just drop in and have a listen. I think you're going to enjoy that. Now, if you want to actually know about the film, watch the about the 50-minute documentary that comes along with it, and you'll learn stuff like, you know, instead of Eric Stoltz, the director really wanted Vincent D'Onofrio, which, you know, just try to picture that. And also, backtracking just a minute, he kind of alludes that he had problems with Eric Stoltz, and I sort of would have liked, you know, I know that doesn't happen in Hollywood, but I wish that he would have expounded on that a little bit more and explained why Eric was such a pain. Probably has something to do with the fact that Eric insisted on being called Martin throughout the picture. He gets, you know, he's one of those actors that gets so into the character that you can't even address him by his actual name. You have to call him by the character's name. Okay, that's a little bit kooky. Also, the fact that comes up in the documentary about Frank Darabont actually contributed heavily to the script. This is the guy who did The Green Mile. This is the guy who did Shawshank Redemption, okay? They all have, you know, schlock roots, don't they? That's a good thing to note. Another good reason to pick up the set is the AMC documentary narrated by Leonard Nimoy, and that's The Fly Papers, and that looks at all of the fly pictures and why these little house flies freak us out so much. That's an hour-long piece, and that is fantastic. Very easily could have gone on The Fly set, and I think it was very, very wise of them to put it on this set, because I think it gives you a little bit more reason to pick up the Fly 2 special edition, as if my own enthusiasm weren't enough. You've got all sort of the regular sort of stuff that you would expect, deleted scenes, especially this one deleted scene with the happy ending, one that, you know, the producers in the studio make you shoot, and thankfully, test audiences absolutely hated it, because, you know, we all know that the film ends exactly the way it should, and it's sort of scary to know that there was this other opportunity for it to end in this other way, and thank God it didn't, but you can see it and savor the fact that it didn't end that way. And for cineschloggers like myself, who enjoy seeing how things were done in the good old days without the use of CGI, well, CWI opens up their vaults and shows you about 30 minutes worth of vintage footage that explains how they did things practically, step by step, how the different creature effects were accomplished, and the, you know, it shows the concept sketches and how things were actually executed on screen in front of the camera in a very real way without bits and bytes in the computer. So that's a lot of fun. One good thing about bits and bytes is that you can do neat things like they did for the DVD, though. And both DVDs, they have this really, it's very simple thing, but I think people are going to love it. And it's a little buzzing fly that kind of visits you throughout the DVD experience. And I think that was just, you know, it's an obvious touch, but it's a really fun touch, too. And I think that's what makes both of these DVDs so much fun for fans out there. They've packed them full of as much goodies as they could, and they've presented the films in the best possible way that they can, with pristine transfers, excellent audio, and I don't think we have any room to complain. And I think we've got two DVD Talk Collector Series discs on our hands, and I think for my best of schlock list, these two are easily on there, and I think we've had a pretty good run recently. We've just skinned deep. I'm pretty sure is going to be on there, and I've got two more on here that I think are really can't miss DVDs for the schlock fan out there. And CineSchlockers definitely need to add these to their collections for the year. Well, I guess that's enough for one Schlockcast. 20 minutes or so of yammering about The Fly and The Fly 2. I think that's plenty. One thing I do need to do, and that's give away some DVDs. You've made it this far, you deserve a prize. That's the deal I usually strike, and I haven't given away any recently, so it's about time. This time you're going to have to work for these suckers, though. I'm not just going to hand them out. We're going to have a trivia question. Everybody loves trivia, right? Okay. Well, I want to know what member of the extended X-Files family appears in The Fly 2. Okay, the first five of you who can tell me what member of the extended X-Files family appears in Fly 2 will receive a DVD. But just to prove to me that you've actually watched The Fly 2, you got to tell me what the magic word is. I have a feeling this is going to be pretty interesting. Oh, and just for the record, I don't have any more copies of Slaughter Disc. No more copies. Quit asking me for them. Y'all are really nice in your emails about how much you enjoy the Schlockcast. And, oh, and by the way, do you still have that porn gore movie? I don't have any more, so quit asking. Go visit those folks on the web. You'll find the link on the blog. And go buy your own goddamn copy of it, you perverts. Anyway, until next time, this is CineSchlockerama columnist Noel Gross. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to DVD Talk Radio. Find DVD Talk Radio online at dvdtalkradio.com.